This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Malaysia recently announced plans to strengthen its defence collaboration with Australia and Saudi Arabia to share resources to fight the Islamic State. Defence Minister Dato Sri Hishamuddin Hussein says the cooperation is to counter the influx of Islamic State recruits who are expected to return home as IS continues to lose ground in Syria and Iraq.
I think anything that can help us fight them is something that we need to explore, especially if the offensive in Mosul, Raqqa and Aleppo is successful, then we will be seeing a lot of returnees, hardcore and battle-hardened IS and Daesh sympathizers coming back to our region, including Australia and Malaysia, southern Philippines and southern Thailand. And if that happens, it will be a matter that we all need to face.
Meanwhile, a Saudi Arabian delegation will visit Malaysia next Monday to discuss plans to build the King Salman Center for Global Peace in Malaysia. The government expects to announce more details on the center, such as its location, cost and who will finance its construction, after it is launched by the middle of this year. Deputy Minister in the PM's department, Dato' Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, says the initiative aims to counter Islamic radicalism by propagating moderate Muslim philosophies.
To project the right image of Islam, it cannot be projected only through aggressive measures or through military or intelligence alone. It has to be tackled in a holistic manner, involving academia, involve international scholars to be part of this initiative coordinated by Malaysia and Saudi. And we want to get as many countries as possible.
However, some observers find Saudi Arabia's shift towards moderate Islam as surprising. Haziq Jani, research analyst at the Rajaratnam School of International Studies, elaborates further.
Saudi funding, promoting moderation is something that I could not imagine in this day and age. Because a lot of the criticisms towards Saudi Arabia is that the kind of Islam that they are propagating in this part of the world, it does not fit into our respective societies. We are basically a very diverse society, with very diverse backgrounds from country to country. So their kind of Islam in the past was accused of not fitting in with society. They have produced a lot of conservatives. You know, I'm not only measuring this based on the liberal measure of what religion should be for them, and we will have to see what kind of so-called moderate Islamic philosophies they are propagating.
This follows a high-profile visit in February of Saudi Arabia's King Salman to Malaysia and other Asian countries.
The past two visits to Malaysia and Indonesia by His Majesty, it seems very hopeful because in both Malaysia and Indonesia, he wants to rebrand the Saudi version of Islam, basically the image that Saudi Arabia has in this region. But His Majesty, as well as the rest of us, has to be very careful because despite him having this noble intention, further down the road, there is transnational financing of non-moderate groups. So we have yet to see how the Saudi government plans to review their soft foreign policy here in the region. The only countries that come to my mind is Malaysia, Indonesia and Philippines, where a lot of Saudi money is coming in. For China and India, I'm not so sure. I know, for instance, that Saudi Arabia funding has built up a lot of mosques and schools in the entire region stretching from India to China. So we'll see how they will review the funding, the manner in which the funding is used, and also to who this funding will now be given to now that they are on the moderate side. If there is no changes, then we have to be very wary about things.
Haziq explains why the funding coming from Saudi Arabia needs to be vetted closely.
It's not that Saudi intentionally wants to create terrorist group all around the world. Their intention is totally different. They want to make sure that there's a form of Islam that they can anchor on to influence in terms of soft power, diplomacy and so on. But the money that they send over to these countries, I'm not sure the level of checks they have in place to make sure that the money is used in a proper way. A lot of times what happens is that money comes in, as long as they preach a certain kind of Islam, the financiers will be happy about it, and that's the end of the story. But they don't know. For instance, we've been trying to tell them that students of these groups have, for reasons other than what was being taught in school, were creating groups and cells and terrorist organizations and so on and so forth. So it is true that they were funding a lot of schools and so on, a lot of pondoks, pesantrens, madrasas in the entire region. Darul Hufaz, for instance, basically centers where people memorize the Quran and so forth.
However, Haziq points out that the Saudi-sponsored schools do produce liberal thinkers.
For instance, may have teachings from the Saudi school of thought, but they have created academically liberal individuals just as they have created terrorist organizations. So there have to be checks in place. In Saudi Arabia, they want to promote moderation. You know, it's not just checks at the level of which schools they will want to give them to and what kind of teachings these schools will then propagate, but also much later on, the products of the school, the students who have graduated, what are they interested in and so forth. Otherwise, it will be a very big problem. And if the Saudi government is unable to do it because, you know, they cannot basically manage all the schools in the world, and then the local governments have to step up and have to ensure that these schools are producing useful students, not students who will then destroy the communities that they came from.
Conservative Islamic preachers such as Zakir Naik have sparked controversy and discord in Malaysia and other countries. With regards to the content and preaching of the invited scholars at Saudi-funded institutions, Haziq believes this also needs to be monitored.
Yeah, not just the content, because sometimes the content, it won't necessarily create haters and killers and so on. The context in which the content is propagated is one. The teachers, the academicians that come in, that they plan to bring in, and then constant monitoring after that, not just at the level of where the money goes to, but also the students themselves. They have to study them and make sure that, you know, this money is being spent properly. Otherwise, it's going to be a lot of money that they're going to bring into this region for this purpose. They don't want to be accused again of being propagators of violence, extremism, and so on.
Scott Lucas is professor of international politics at Birmingham University. He explains that from a global perspective, King Salman's visit coincides with the Saudis' desire for greater security cooperation with Malaysia and other Asian countries.
Of course, these announcements about cooperation involving Indonesia, Malaysia, Australia, other countries, comes after Saudi Arabia has made a very high profile move with the visit of King Salman to the region, with the Saudis trying to say, look, we're still relevant here. We want to project our own influence beyond the Gulf, at a time when the Saudis have very clear economic concerns as well as their own internal security concerns. Fighting terrorism is a nice headline, but I think really we have to talk about questions that go beyond those issues of returning fighters, to talk about the economic, political, and social conditions that provide stability contributing to security. It's kind of understandable but disappointing that we learn very little in the West, you know, talk about Europe or the U.S., about that visit by King Salman. I mean, what grabbed the headlines was, of course, you know, the vast expense and the large entourage he brought, you know, that excess of wealth that he displayed.
The Saudis' power projection overseas reflects various challenges it is facing domestically.
The real concerns that would have propelled the Saudi visit at this time due in large part to a changing kingdom. I mean, changing very clearly in terms not only of the economic position that it's in terms of the regional uncertainty, including Syria, including Yemen, but the very fact that a new generation is coming forward in Saudi politics, the Deputy Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman. You know, all of that was in play from the Saudi side, and then, of course, from the Malaysia side, about which we hear precious little outside of Asia. You know, Malaysia has got this stake, as does Indonesia, in terms of Muslim countries, to really sort of set forth, I wouldn't say models, but at least their own developing projects, which say, look, you don't have to have division over religion. You don't have to have a sectarian issue overtaking a country. We can really show a way forward in which we're dealing with these economic and social issues, hopefully together, and also with other countries in the region. Saudi is almost looking to that type of place, like in Malaysia, like in Indonesia, to say, all right, here is a place where we can get new links developed, which can be productive links, even as we go through a time of economic uncertainty, even as we go through this headline issue about Islamic State, about civil war in Syria. Now, Malaysia has its own internal questions, has longstanding political questions, but to the extent that I think Malaysia and other countries in the region show that type of stability we've been discussing, that puts them, I think, in a very significant position.
After failures of their recent military interventions in Yemen and Syria, the Saudis are now using the soft power approach to expand their influence globally. The King Salman Center in Malaysia can be seen as an extension of this policy.
Saudi's trying to say, look, we have this very positive face of combating radicalism, extremism, promoting dialogue. Saudi Arabia, with a very, very conservative approach to Islam, with this notion of Wahhabism, has been accused, whether or not you think the accusation is just, but it has been accused of fomenting radicalism, fomenting extremism, if not by directly funding it, by providing a version of Islam which can be seen to be very aggressive and can be very sectarian. But I think that Saudi Arabia, in terms of its political culture, I think is still going to be seen at odds with other countries and other versions of Islam, is not necessarily one that is even in line now with other Gulf countries, let alone with Muslim countries further afield. I don't think simply declaring you're going to open a center is going to give the Saudis that automatic boost that they are on the cutting edge of providing answers to these very tricky questions. I think in many ways that has to come from a Malaysian response. You know, how will they work with this center? How will they see this interacting with their own projects? The Saudis have opened up centers in many other countries in the world in recent years. There was a high-profile initiative which opened centers in the U.S. and in the U.K. to promote understanding. You don't hear much about those centers when the headlines are that the Saudis are continuing to bomb in Yemen or that they continue to have very serious questions about a Saudi Arabia in which all Saudis feel they are represented rather than having a monarchy holding most of the power.
I'm Jason Lim reporting for BFM.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.